Diana's Hope has been a longtime member here at St. Andrews. She did have a wonderful career as a school teacher and a school counselor. And we need to give our counselors more credit because kids are really challenged these days. Okay. Diane, come on up.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're all here. I had mentioned to Cheryl last week, she was so sweet, she came up to me at church and said, I'm looking forward to next week. And I said, I'm so glad you're coming. And I'm not a theologian, I just love Bible study. And so I thought, you know, Jean and Marv have been so amazing, donating so much time. And I thought, okay, Diane, you can do this. So I thought I'd start with a disclaimer. And so I'm really glad to be here. On the back table, if you didn't get handouts, there is a map that shows what the Middle East looked like during the time of Esther. And then there's also a page that has terms on it. So that if you can hang on to those, this is a 2-week Bible study, and hopefully you'll come back next week. Those will hopefully be helpful to you just to kind of check in and take a look at. As I was working on this, I thought with everything that's going on in Israel and the Gaza the last couple of weeks, it's a very timely book for us to be talking about. I will also, in February, be teaching a 2-week class on Ruth. So I'm inspired by women in the Bible. So, let's see. Would it be good to go around and introduce ourselves in case people don't know each other, or do you want to hit the ground running? Get the ground running. Okay, that sounds great. Okay. So just so you know, how many of you studied Esther before? So it is a well-known book, but the interesting thing I think about Esther is that we don't really know if there was an Esther. There is no evidence that there actually was an Esther, but they refer to it as a novella, that it was a book that was written, they assume, by a Jewish person. So it's kind of an interesting thing to think about is if possibly there really wasn't an Esther, why was it included in the Old Testament? So that would be debated until the end times because we don't know. The emphasis on Esther is based on the Jewish festival Purim, P-U-R-I-M. And so it talks a lot about what led up to that. It also talks a lot about Jewish nationalism in the book. So we're going to do some reading out of there, so I hope people are comfortable reading out loud. I will bring the microphone to you. So the first thing I would like to do is start with chapter 1, verses 1 through 12. Is there anyone who's willing to read that, please?
Oh, I just hesitated because some of the words look hard to pronounce. I'm going to go for it. Okay. This happened in the days of Ahasuerus, the same as Ahasuerus who ruled over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. In those days, when King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne in the citadel of Susa, in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his officials and ministers. The army of Persia and Media and the nobles and governors of the provinces were present. While he displayed the great wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and pomp of his majesty for many days, 180 days in all. When these days were completed, the king gave for all the people present in the citadel of Susa, both great and small, a banquet lasting for 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. There were white cotton curtains and blue hangings tied with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rings and marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver on mosaic pavement and porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and colored with stones. Drinks were served in golden goblets, goblets of different kinds, and the royal wine was lavished according to the bounty of the king. Drinking was by flagons, without restraint, for the king had given orders to all the officials of his palace to do as each one desired. Furthermore, Queen Vashti gave a banquet for the women in the palace of King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, when the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abaca, Sifar, and Carcas, the seven eunuchs who attended him, to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing the royal crown, in order to show the peoples and the officials her beauty, for she was fair to behold. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command conveyed by the eunuchs. At this, the king was enraged, and his anger burned within him.
Thank you. Now, some of you may have a different name for the king. Does anybody show in their Bible Xerxes as the king? X-E-R-S-E-S, I think is how it's spelled.
Okay,
that's what mine shows as well. So that's who I'm going to be referring to, maybe partly because you did such a beautiful job pronouncing these. I have a hard time pronouncing that one. So I've got a few questions, and there's no right or wrong answers to a lot of these questions. They're just for us to have discussion. Why did the king want Queen Vashti to leave her own banquet to come to his in verse 11? Why would he want her to come over?
Trophy wife.
I love it. Trophy wife. Absolutely. He wanted to show off her beauty, her robes, her jewels, so that everybody could see, wow, he's got it going on with this woman. So, absolutely. How did the king respond to her decision not to come? Oh, he was ticked. He was ticked. You don't say no to the king. You just don't. But she did. Also, the other part to think about is there were seven advisors that he consulted with. So when we go to the next part of this, we'll talk about that. So he was trying to get a sense of, okay, what do I do now? Anybody have any ideas why the queen would have a separate banquet from the king? Yes. Men and women are kept separated in a lot of those cases. So she would have a banquet for the women. He would have the banquet for the men. Okay, now we're going to read a little bit more. Please remember that there are seven advisors that they are not talking about in this section, but I want you to be aware of. So for chapter 1, verses 15 through 20, would someone be willing to read that? So 15 through 20. According to law, what must be done to Queen Vashti? He asked. And he was talking to his advisors. She has not obeyed the command of King Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her. Then Memucan replied in the presence of the king and the nobles, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against all the nobles and the peoples of all the provinces of King Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median women of the nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. Therefore, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed, that Vashti is never again to enter the presence of King Xerxes. Also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she. Then, when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout all his vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest. So, looking at that, do you think his edict will get women to respect their husbands?
No.
I agree. There are, you can command certain things, and if you are full of fear, it may work. But I don't know, today if there was a king commanding women, would they respect that?
Probably not.
Probably not. I don't know if any of you followed, there was a princess or queen in Saudi Arabia that fled the country, went to England, and wanted to divorce her husband. And so the only way she could do it was to escape. She certainly couldn't do it in Saudi Arabia. So he was commanding respect and got none, ended up in the tabloids. So, why do you think that they would not respect him out of fear? I mean, it seems like in those, so many of the things we read, you know, the king is the one and everyone has to follow what he says. Any thoughts? Any questions?
What I was saying is that if you have a chink in the armor, in other words, if somebody gets away with something, then all of a sudden it's like a house of sand that just crashes to the ground. So the king cannot allow that, especially in those days. You know, probably even today in Saudi Arabia, Iran, places like that too.
I totally agree with that, for sure. Okay, so let's go on to another section here. We are doing a lot of reading since I'm not a theologian, and we like to hear what the Lord has to say. The king was drinking wine when he made his decision about Queen Vashti. Do you think his seven advisors considered it, and does it matter if they did?
They were probably drinking too.
I think you're right. And does it really even matter?
No.
No. No, for sure. Okay, chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. Can I find a volunteer? Oh, wonderful.
After these things, when the anger of King Xerxes had abated, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's servants who attended him said, "Let beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king, and let the king appoint commissioners in all the provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in the citadel of Susa under custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women. Let their cosmetic treatments be given them, and let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This pleased the king, and he did so. Now there was a Jew in the citadel of Susa, whose name was Mordecai, son of Jerusalem of Shemashian of Kish, a Benjaminite. Kish had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives, carried away with King Jeconiah of Judah, whom King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon had carried away. Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his cousin, for she had neither father nor mother. The girl was fair and beautiful, and when her father and her mother died, Mordecai adopted her as his own daughter. So when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in the citadel of Susa in custody of Haggai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in custody of Haggai, who had charge of the women. The girl who pleased them and won his favor, and he quickly provided her with her cosmetic treatments and her portion of food, and with 7 chosen maids from the king's palace, and advanced her and her maids to the best place in the harem. Esther did not reveal her people or kindred, for Mordecai had charged her not to tell. Every day Mordecai would walk around in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and how she fared.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So what do you think Esther was feeling during this time?
What is going on?
Yes. Yes, what is going on, and why are these decisions being made for me? Doesn't talk about whether she feels safe where she's at right now, except having lost her mother and father, Mordecai was her guardian, and she must have felt, kind of indicates some safety, sense of feeling safe there. So, yes, what is going on, and why are these decisions being made for me without my input? Of course, at that time, that probably was pretty common. You don't have a lot of self-determination. What do you think Mordecai was feeling during this time?
Anxious. He was worried about her.
Yes.
Especially if they would discover she was a Jew.
Yes. What do you think would happen if they discovered she was a Jew? Remember, he had forbidden her
to reveal that she was Jewish.
Well, the fact that she was not Babylonian, or Persian, basically, would indicate that, that she probably, kind of like Moses was in a situation that if he found out, he'd probably be killed or banished or whatever, So, yeah. People forget that Xerxes was also as powerful as he was. He was the one that took over the 300 Spartans and stuff like that. And this guy, invaded Greece. He was an extremely powerful leader. And so he toned down here in the Book of Esther, but in the real world, he was something else.
I'm so glad you're here, Kim. I don't have that background, so thank you. That's awesome. Yes.
It would probably also have been another embarrassment to the king, which would have been a bigger motivation for him to retaliate.
Good point. Good point. Let's see here. Why do you think that Mordecai continued to sit at the gates after she had been kind of situated in the harem? And kind of like a parent, still worrying about her even if she knew that she was okay. Whoops, sorry. And actually, you need to read on for some of this. I've got chapter 2, 17 and 18, 21 through 23. Would someone be willing to read that? Thank you.
The king loved Esther more than all the other women. Of all the virgins, she won his favor and devotion, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great banquet to all his officials and ministers, Esther's banquet. He also granted a holiday to the provinces and gave gifts with royal liberality. In those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But the matter came to the knowledge of Mordecai, and he told it to Queen Esther, and Esther told the king in the name of Mordecai. When the affair was investigated and found to be so, both of the men were hanged on the gallows. It was recorded in the Book of the Annals in the presence of the king.
Thank you. So I asked one of those questions early about Mordecai waiting around by the gates. Now that he felt she was safe, I wonder why he didn't just go home. I mean, that's kind of a repeat of what I've asked before, but if you knew your child was okay, would you go home?
Waiting for the other boot to drop.
That's a good point. I think about dropping my kids off at college and what that felt like. But we have communication methods now that they didn't have in those days. I'm going to read chapter 3. And then we'll get into a little bit about what was going on with Hammond. I meant to tell you, if you look at the map that I provided for you, you can see Susa, which is the capital of that area, and it's a citadel, which means it's fortified, and so it kind of gives you a sense of where in present-day Iran that it is. And it was the capital city. Okay, so I'm going to read chapter 3, 1 through 6, and 8 through 11. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him, but Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore, they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet, having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. I'm going to skip over to 8 through 11 now. Then Haman said to King Xerxes, "There is a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom, whose customs are different from those of all the other people, and who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury for the men who carry out this business." So the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. "Keep the money," the king said to Haman, "and do with the people as you please." So, couple questions. Let's see here. What was the reason given why King Xerxes honored Haman? Can you find that in the reading? Hearing no response is actually accurate. There is no explanation why he made a big deal out of this person and honored him. I mean, we can make guesses, but we really don't know why. Why do you think that that information was not in the story? I mean, as we go through Esther, you may be feeling like that would have been helpful to know that. Why do you think that wasn't included?
Ask me that.
Oh, no problem. Anybody have any ideas why? Yes.
Well, I think things just got edited over time as this book, because it's oral history. So things got omitted maybe to make it shorter.
I like that. Oral history, as you pass it on, it changes and changes and changes. So could easily just have been deleted. And we can guess, but at least we know that he was honored. Okay, couriers went out to deliver the edict to destroy the Jews. I think I found it interesting that Mordecai shared that he was a Jew, but he didn't want Esther to share that she was a Jew. Why do you think it was different for him than it was for her? And there's no right or wrong answers. It's just, any thoughts?
I thought maybe Mordecai is concerned for Esther's safety, but less concerned for his own safety than he is for his beliefs.
Well, and did he feel safer maybe as a man than a woman would feel? Just a thought. Plus, again, he's got that guardian parent role playing in there for sure. Okay, we're going to read chapter 4, 1 through 17. Is anyone willing to read that, please? Thank you for volunteering.
When Mordecai learned all that had been done, Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went through the city wailing with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. In every province, wherever the king's command and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting and weeping and lamenting, and most of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's maids and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what was happening and why. Hathach went up to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther, explain it to her, and charge her to go to the king and make supplication to him and entreat him for her people. Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a message for Mordecai, saying, "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law. All alike are to be put to death. Only if the king holds out the golden scepter to someone may that person live. I myself have not been called to come into the king for 30 days. When they told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter, but you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this." Then Esther said in reply to Mordecai, "Go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will also fast as you do. After that, I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him.
Thank you. So a complicated time, for sure. So how did Mordecai answer Esther's fears in these verses in the book? How did he address what she was afraid of? Any thoughts? Well, yes.
She was groomed for this purpose.
She was groomed for this purpose.
She was groomed for this purpose, and
It was just time to step up.
Yeah, I love it. Time to step up. And that's pretty much what he alluded to. Such a time as this, you hear that phrase sometimes, such a time as this, and this was it. So her dilemma was, I could die, or all the Jews could die, so what do I do with this? Kind of a tough decision, for sure. Let's see. How did Esther prepare for her meeting with the king in these verses when she knew she needed to find an opening to meet with him? How did she prepare?
Fasting.
Yes, fasting, exactly. And so the question is that religious fasting? Is that fasting in more of a secular means to be able to clear your head and really decide kind of where to go from here? We don't really know for sure. Any thoughts on that? Do you think it was because of her faith that she fasted to try to get some direction or to get clear thoughts?
I choose A and B.
Oh, okay. Sure. A and B. Yeah, for sure.
All of the above.
Yeah, they work together. For sure. Okay, so we're going to read chapter 5, verses 1 through 8. I will read that. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. So here's the big moment. You know, is he going to accept me or put me to death? The king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. Then the king asked, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be given to you." "If it pleases the king," replied Esther, "let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet I have prepared for him." "Bring Haman at once," the king said, "so that we may do what Esther asks." So the king and Haman went to the banquet Esther had prepared. As they were drinking wine, the king again asked Esther, "Now what is your petition? It will be given you. And what is your request? Even up to the half the kingdom, it will be granted." To double check, I'm not reading too far. No. Esther replied, "My petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet. I will prepare for them. Then I will answer the king's questions." Why do you think she wanted to have another banquet? Why not just tell him what she wanted? Yes?
I think to emphasize the importance of what she was going to ask him, that you know, she to prepare him for, you know, for to make him understand how this is really going to be an important thing that she's going to ask. In preparation.
I like that. Plus, I'm sure she's thinking in her mind, the king has honored Haman. I mean, he's a big deal in the king's eyes. So, you know, being prepared and setting things up the correct way, whatever that correct way is, a good one. So, good point. Okay, let's go on to chapter 5, 9 through 14. Would anybody be willing to read that aloud?
Haman went out that day happy and in high spirits. But when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence, he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. calling together his friends and Zeresh, his wife. Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth, his many sons, and all the ways that the king had elevated him and honored him above the other nobles and officials. And that's not all, Haman added. I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to the banquet she gave, and she has invited me along with the king tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. His wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, have a pole set up reaching to a height of 50 cubits and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai impaled on it. Then go with the king to the banquet and enjoy yourself. This suggestion delighted him, and he had the pole set up.
How grim. I was going to say, have a happy day.
Yeah, what a happy day.
Wow. Now, my Bible had more specifics in terms of what current measurements would be. So they called it a gallows, and it was 75 feet high, is what this says, and for Mordecai to be hanged on it. Well, impaled is definitely more visually aware, I guess I would say. So why do you think Haman was so confident about his meeting with the king? It's like he was strutting his stuff and everything. The queen wants me. You know, this is so great. Why do you think he was so confident? No right answer.
I mean, it sounds like he's sort of an arrogant, power-hungry guy. And, you know, he got his way with the king and, you know, got to wipe out this group of Jewish people. So he's feeling pretty good about himself. You know, he's probably an insecure guy, but now he's feeling confident.
When I was reading this, the word that came to my mind was narcissist.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you know, you're not reading between the lines here. But he had been honored. So, okay, so we have some more to read, but it's 9:45. So I want to respect your time in case you want to refill your coffee. Plus, we will meet again next week. I really appreciate you being here. I hope you learned something from this. We've got lots more, and we'll find out what happens with Esther and Mordecai. Thank you so much.
Thank you.